No BS Nutrition is growing an herb garden, and we're not mad about it.
This is a one-hour food fight against diet culture and its fake science messages.
Instead, we're passionate about celebrating real wellness.
I'm registered dietitian Hannah McGee.
And I'm neuroscience PhD student Tariq Youssef, and this is No BS Nutrition.
All right. So, welcome back, everyone, to another episode of the No BS Nutrition Podcast. We are so happy to have you here. Tariq, how are you doing?
So happy. I'm doing great. The sun is shining. I know I'm going to safely see you tonight in the bubble.
Yeah.
In our beautiful bubble. So, I'm looking forward to that. We've both had kind of away from home weeks.
Yeah. I'm definitely getting back into the swing of things today after a little vacation away. So that was nice. And you had we talked about this in the last week's episode, but your was supposed to be relaxing weekend, but then you ended up having a conference. So
yeah, back and forth. But the conference was great.
Yeah.
For people who are listening who found out about our podcast from the conference, thanks for listening.
Yeah, thank you. Hello, welcome. Did you find some time to chill?
So one thing I actually wanted to bring up, this is a really important piece of culture that I wanted to kind of bring up to people and see how you reacted before we dive into the episode. One thing I did to relax while Thomas and I were away was watch some episodes of Jeopardy. Love Jeopardy.
I love Jeopardy.
Alex Trebek, incredible icon. Yeah. I think he has ties to Canada. I don't know if he went to McGill or something.
Yeah.
So one of the, worst things about human society is the 2 minutes during Jeopardy when they ask the contestants personal questions.
That is
my belief. And my belief around this is also that the segment producer behind that at Jeopardy is absolutely laughing their little butt off because they told the contestant, that's a very interesting story. You should definitely share that with millions of viewers. Random story about nothing. I love the show. Love Alex Trebek. I'm not trying to be mean, but it is honestly one of the most cringe-inducing
totally
things of any TV show.
Even any
reality TV show, this is one of the most cringe things.
They bring up the stupidest stories about these people.
And Hannah, they've obviously checked the stories with a segment producer, which is the part that boggles my mind. Someone is in charge of being you should tell that story.
Yeah,
and
for sure.
It has to be a prank. And one that really stood out to me while I was watching Jeopardy recently was this woman talked about how she used to work at a research facility and that people used to call her the hamster madam because she used to help facilitate hamster meetings. Why would you bring that? I guess she did her job because here I am still talking about it. Maybe that was the whole intention. But I've never watched one of those stories and been this is a great story. And the worst, how it gets even worse is when the champions continue on, episode by episode, it's the same person telling different stories.
Yeah.
I mean, I understand, this is a difficult thing. I think if a segment producer came up to me and was what's a 12-second story that you can tell that would really capture an audience, I would have trouble. I'm not denying that this is a difficult thing. But then the champions, let's say they go on for 5-6 episodes, they have to tell 5 or 6 different 15-second stories that honestly they get worse and worse each time, and they already didn't start out from a good place. Anyway, I just wanted to share that with everybody, and if we can collectively as a society find a solution to the Jeopardy contestant stories, I would love that. If anyone wants to start a change.org petition about them, I'd happily sign it. But we do need to find a solution. And that's all I have to say about that.
I agree. Thank you so much for bringing that up.
You're welcome.
Because it's really something that I needed to be addressed.
I think we've all been struggling with this, and I'm happy that I was brave enough to finally bring it up so that everyone can feel seen and heard. Seriously, during this difficult time.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Oh my God, I'm dying. Okay, so I feel like we should jump in because I think this episode's going to be a hearty one. Like, it's going to be robust.
Yes. Yeah. Very hearty. Yeah. Absolutely.
So, Tarek.
Full of fruits and vegetables. Am I right?
Right. Okay. Tarek, please tell me what your BS of the week is. What BS did you come across this week?
Aside from the Jeopardy personal stories?
That was your BS of the week?
That was my... I'm doing two BS's of the week this week, and one of them was Jeopardy.
Okay, what a treat.
So my second BS of the week during this episode is the greenwashing effect. Are you familiar with this?
So I'm not.
This is kind of coming off of our Health Halo conversation, I think now two episodes ago.
No, that was last week.
Okay, that was last week. Thank you. Where we talked about how sometimes foods can, you know, benefit from this sort of PR or marketing or misconception that they are quote unquote a healthier choice, whatever that means, because of some sort of claim or something. So I was kind of familiar with this kind of adjacent effect called the greenwashing effect. So, I'm going to talk about two different blog posts here from some experts that will hopefully elucidate what the greenwashing effect is and how it's kind of related to the health halo, but it's really, it's its own little thing. Okay. So the first blog post that I'm going to be talking about is called The Greenwashing Effect. It's by Dr. Joe Schwartz. So Dr. Schwartz is actually the director of the McGill Office for Science and Society, and they do lots of science communication around misconceptions, junk science. They do a bunch of debunking.
Nice.
They write like really fun blog posts. Obviously, the link will be in the description of the episode or the show notes, so please check it out. Really easy to read blogs. So Dr. Schwartz talks about how the greenwashing effect is kind of this, it's a very specific health halo where things will be given labels like plant-based or plant-derived so that they appear more environmentally friendly, they appear better somehow. There's like this misleading claim about the product's superiority, even things like its environmental impact, its safety, whether it has like, quote, less toxins, for example. Mm. So this greenwashing effect is seen in a broad array of things, even things like cleaning products. That's probably where people can link to the most, right? So, but the thing is, like, not all, quote, natural things are safer, which is something that Dr. Schwartz brings up. So he, for example, he notes, like, you wouldn't want to roll around in a bush of poison ivy just because it's natural. Totally. Poison ivy is still, you know, quote, poisonous or whatever. But I was thinking more about food. So is there a greenwashing effect that claims, you know, superior health benefits for plant-based food products, for example? Well, I think this is absolutely true, actually. So I turned to what some other experts were saying. So I found a blog post called Greenwashing in the Food Industry. It's by Patricia Beaumont. And this is from what's called the Green Dandelion blog from the University of Rochester. So, and I think people will definitely be able to make the link here. So things as simple as even foods that are branded organic, which are very likely the same as their non-organic labeled counterparts, bear some sort of branding or whatever that labels them as being more natural, for example. It's kind of, it's this greenwashing effect that somehow this food, just because it has branding, is better for me, more superior, maybe healthier, and maybe not even just healthier, but also safer. Maybe it's also been cultivated in a way that's, quote, better for the environment. And maybe we can have a whole episode on this in the future. Maybe it'll be tied with the transgenic foods episodes, but organic foods, unless there's some very, very strict certification by very few select organizations, labeling something as organic almost sometimes means nothing. It can mean something as very simple as like that farm or whatever, or that the producer belongs to some sort of affiliation that's somehow gotten like an organic branding, and it's sort of like a branding thing rather than a regulation around pesticides, unless it's different organizations. Some organizations do actually have very, very strict guidelines about what herbicides can be used, what pesticides can be used, and so on. But oftentimes, it doesn't mean anything. So specifically talking for the U.S., actually,
yeah.
anything can be labeled organic. You can put organic on pretty much anything, and there's less strict guidelines about that. What's more strict is, like, which certification you can actually put on your product, for example.
Okay.
And then the definition of organic changes depending on the certification. So it's very muddy waters, to be honest, yeah. for organic. And we can look into that deeper. I think that would be a fun episode.
Oh, for sure.
So what about where we buy our foods, for example? So I thought this was really interesting. The blog brought this up. So Shirley, for example, a local farmer's market is the place to go where you not only want to support local, but you're also going to get, like, healthfully grown crops. You would think no pesticides are used. You would think it would be non-GMO, which,
whatever,
to be honest, doesn't matter. But anyway, these are the connotations that you get, right? That it's healthier for me. It's a natural product, whatever that means. And it's probably grown in a way that's really good for the environment.
Okay.
So the blog linked to a really interesting investigation that actually happened in Canada. That's actually led to some even more devious cases being brought up into the limelight, even more devious than just things like organic branding. So there was an investigation in Ontario at a farmer's market where a vendor was caught reselling wholesale produce by CBC in 2017, which basically means, so there were basically labs that went out, got some of this produce, tested it, and found that it actually wasn't from a local farm. It was just like, basically like Costco food that they bought right. and were reselling at the farmer's market. And it's been documented elsewhere as well. And even apparently some market vendors have been forgetting to peel off the plastic barcode stickers from the produce that they're selling.
Oh, no.
Basically meaning that, like, obviously this wasn't their whatever family farm that they were selling, right. Getting the food from. It was whatever wholesale producers and they were just reselling it.
Wow.
There's also other things that benefit from the greenwashing effect, like plastic water bottles, for example. Sometimes, you know, there's very fanciful nature branding on the labels, like beautiful waterfalls and so on. They're from, quote, natural springs. What springs are unnatural? Anyway, so there's Good even point. These promotions around water bottles about, you know, reduced carbon emissions for specific brands and the way that they manufacture the plastic, or even how recyclable their bottles are, which are basically all PR mumbo jumbo. And the blog makes the point that, like, if you want to combat plastic pollution, the solution is not to make more plastic bottles, but in fact, it's as simple as, like, not using plastic bottles. Right. So, like, regardless of whether or not your bottles are, quote, 30% more recycled plastic, they're still making more plastic. Sure. Like, you're still putting more plastic out into the industry.
Absolutely.
So it's kind of this, like, another PR scheme that where a food product, or in this case, water, benefits from this greenwashing effect. So it even goes as deep as things like, quote, 100% natural juice. So it's true, 100% natural juice can indeed maybe not come from artificial flavorings and maybe doesn't have added sugars.
Yep.
But it's still the case that 100% juice concentrates sugar in high quantity, more than you would get, for example, from one serving of fruit.
Totally.
So oftentimes... even more than that, oftentimes 100% quote natural juice will still have preservatives in it, and its flavorings are still very tightly managed. Whether or not there's artificial flavorings added, there may be some, you know, additives or chemical preservatives that are put in there to make sure that that flavoring, you know, is very maintained. It's because a brand, for example, will want to make sure that bottle to bottle the juice tastes exactly sure. the same. So whether or not it's like all real fruit, that's not what I'm arguing here. It's still benefiting from this marketing that it's, quote, all natural, even though when you're getting juice, for example, you're still making a choice that's, for example, not the same as consuming a serving of fruit, and or it's still going to have preservatives in it.
Not the same. Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Or even not the same as, like, literally just squeezing the juicing juice out something. Of the fruit. Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. So this is all to say, like, the greenwashing effect is Enjoy the foods you're eating, but definitely consider the marketing around them and whether or not, you're being swayed to make a decision that you maybe normally wouldn't just because something says it's plant-based or it's all natural.
Yeah, that's
oftentimes that doesn't really mean anything substantial. And again, like we've been saying before, it doesn't mean that you're necessarily making a more healthy choice, whatever that means to you.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's such a good point that you bring up, that there's so much PR and marketing that goes into like all of the products really that we come across
Yeah.
at the store, and it is such a challenge to and that was the first thing I thought of when you mentioned this effect was like cleaning products and
Right.
household products, because I'll admit, like, I have trouble with that when I'm at the store trying to figure out like what laundry detergent to buy or what like
Right.
cleaning product to buy, and like
Me too.
this one says like more environmentally friendly, and I'm like, but why? Like, and I don't truly
Yeah.
understand like why or what about the chemicals in this one make it more environmentally friendly than the other one, and or what makes it more quote unquote natural or whatever. So it really is a lot of marketing that goes into these things. So I agree. You raise a good point that like we really have to consider or like just be more conscious when we're making these purchases about why we're purchasing them, or like are we just buying them? And same, we talked about this with the health halo effect, like just because that one like what's the word I'm looking for? Like phrase or that one,
Claim, yeah.
yeah, claim is on the label, or buzzword. That's what I was looking for. That one,
Buzzword,
like,
yeah.
all natural or plant-based or whatever is on the label. You might have to, I don't know, if you genuinely want to make more sustainable purchases or buy products that are better for the environment, then I think there's more that needs to go into it than just like reading the
I
label on the
agree.
product. I think
I
there's
it also
more.
makes me think of like I think some people have a superiority complex when it comes to making these decisions and that from products that benefit from the health halo and maybe the greenwashing effect. And I would say get off your pedestal because people who are not buying whatever, like quote unquote 100% natural juice are not worse than you. And they may not necessarily be making like less nutritious choices than you for them. So
Right.
stop judging people for the choices they make around their food.
Yeah, I agree. And yeah, same with where you buy your food, like whether you
Yeah.
like shop at the farmer's market or like the, I don't know, the what's the word for like
Discount
the
grocery store or
discount grocery
something.
store. Yeah, exactly. I totally agree. You can't be on that pedestal or put, shopping at the farmer's market on this pedestal or think that it's you're better because you're doing that. I
Yeah.
agree. Very good points you bring up in this BS of the week. There's,
Thank you.
yeah, I think that gives everyone a lot to think about, and because I mean, we all shop, we all grocery shop, we all
Right.
buy house cleaning products, we all, consume. So these are really important things to consider, and be more mindful of what's influencing our decisions.
This is the thing, like, often I think people think, oh, like, I don't need to have conversations around nutrition or food choices because it doesn't really affect me. But through doing this podcast with you, I honestly think it affects more people
Oh, yeah.
than the average person would think.
Agreed. Yeah.
You're being influenced by diet culture or by health halos or by greenwashing or by fat phobia,
Yeah. Oh,
whether you
totally.
know it or not.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. Whether you have an interest in nutrition or not, or whether you have, yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great. That was awesome.
Thank you so
Okay.
much.
So this week's main topic is, we touched on it, I guess, 2 weeks ago in your BS of the week when we kind of got into, we talked about Dr. Stephen Gundry and his website, Gundry, what is it, Gundry MD or something like that,
Gundry MD, yeah.
and his beliefs. And then we started to kind of talk about lectins and what they are, and Dr. Gundry's book, which is called The Plant Paradox.
Right.
And I don't know if I mentioned in that episode, but we actually had a request to address this topic from a listener or a friend of the pod. So I want to shout her out first. So, like I said, friend of the pod and dietetic intern, Emily, wrote in actually a while back, I think it was in May, and wanted us to address the plant paradox diet. So we didn't forget about you, Emily. It's just been
Thank you, Emily.
A whirlwind of a couple months. So I just want to read a little bit of what she wrote to us. So she said, I'm a dietetic intern at a research hospital, and you guys have to look at the plant paradox diet. I had a patient with a Parkinson's-like disorder who followed this diet so strictly because of claims that this doctor makes, and she's referring to Dr. Gundry. So she says, he restricts lectins from plants, and she says this patient wouldn't even eat things like balsamic vinegar or grapeseed oil. And on top of it, this doctor sells and promotes supplements made out of ridiculous ingredients, and she says in brackets, basically all of the foods that he restricts on the diet. And she says she calculated it, and her patient was spending around $400 a month on these supplements. Wow. And she says, you know, it was infuriating because this doctor profits off of people feeling desperate for help, like this patient she had with a Parkinson's-like disorder who clearly, you know, wanted to do everything that they could to, you know, promote health or, you know, prevent progression of their condition.
Of their Parkinsonism.
Yeah, exactly. And she says, but if you look at the research about plant lectins and health, there's really not much, or there's next to nothing. So that's what we're going to talk about today. So thank you so much, Emily, for writing in. And let's just jump in and talk about lectins and the plant paradox diet. So
I just say congratulations, Emily, for getting an internship. I know how competitive those are from talking to Hannah.
From what I remember, I think Emily said that she's doing her internship at the National Institute of Health in the States.
Wow, so that's congratulations.
Pretty cool. Yeah,
Very prestigious.
Cool. Very prestigious. Yeah. So congrats. So the plant paradox diet, I had heard of it before, but I really, until you actually talked about it, Tarek, I hadn't really like looked into it that much. So the book by Dr. Gundry is called The Plant Paradox, These Hidden Dangers in quote unquote healthy foods that cause disease and weight gain. So that's his book. And these hidden dangers in healthy foods that he's referring to are lectins. So that's what we're going to talk about. So I can't remember, did you give a little like description of lectins in your last episode?
I think 2 weeks ago. I think all I said was something very vague, like they are plant proteins.
Yeah.
Which is true.
It's true. Vague. Yeah. So lectins are a type of protein that are found in a lot of foods, but particularly many plant-based foods. So they're found in things like legumes, so like beans or lentils, grains, fruits and vegetables, specifically like the nightshade vegetables, so like tomatoes, eggplant, peppers, potatoes. And then they are also found in eggs and some dairy products as well.
Right. So they're even in some nuts and seafood, I think.
Yeah, you're right. So lectins are carbohydrate-binding proteins, meaning like they bind with carbohydrates or carbohydrate,
basically sugar molecules.
Molecules, that's the word I was looking for. I can't find my words today. I'm like, what
that's
is
okay.
it? And they're also known as something called agglutinins. I don't know if you saw that word in your reading.
Yeah.
So they have like an agglutinating properties, which means that they can cause cells, specifically red blood cells, to clump together. That's been seen in like in vitro or like petri dish like studies. They've seen that.
You're basically reading my notes right now.
Oh, no way.
Which is great. No, this is fantastic.
I love it. So yeah, they've seen that, you know, when adding lectins to like red blood cells, it causes them to clump together. But I think one thing we need to note like early on is that how lectins respond in petri dish studies, you know, we need to kind of be critical of that when we're comparing how they behave in the human body and how we assess their impact on, you know, human health. So
can I add one thing to that? Just because it's like
of
right
course,
on that
of course,
topic.
Yeah.
So This is true. What Hannah is saying is absolutely right from what I've seen as well. So the data for harm from lectins causing this kind of binding together of red blood cells, and I've seen even some data saying white blood cells as well, which are involved in our immunity responses, has been from experiments either in animals or in petri dishes and cell culture, like Hannah said, and mostly not or at, if any at all, you know, functioning complex human bodies. Especially, I just want to add the point here that, you know, human bodies that don't eat bucket loads, or human bodies that do eat bucket loads of lectin by the pound and nothing else, which is basically how this is done in the petri dish or in animals. The doses of the experimental compounds like lectins that are used in these studies would more than likely be way larger than what you would be consuming if, say, you ate an apple or you ate a tomato.
Absolutely. Such a good point. Yeah, and we need to say that.
And it's like in isolation as well. Right. It's like without other
anything else. Yeah, so thank you so much for saying that. I think we need to get that out there early on. So a little bit more about lectins. They are also believed to have like a defense mechanism allowing them to protect like the plant that they're in against pathogens like fungi, insects, mold, or other diseases in their environment. And they're also known as anti-nutrients. So I don't know if anyone listening has heard that term before, but this is because they're non-digestible in humans. So they're not something that we would like break down and absorb. And they bind to cell membranes. Like we said, they're carbohydrate binding of various
basically
cells.
We can't use them to make anything else in our body.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, so they bind to cell membranes of various types of cells. So like I was saying, they're carbohydrate binding and they pass through the gut unchanged. So again, they wouldn't be broken down in any way, shape, or form. They pass through the gut unchanged. That being said, just because something is an anti-nutrient or, you know, doesn't necessarily get absorbed or like utilized by the body doesn't mean that it's bad for us. Because, for example, another anti-nutrient is fiber. So we know that, or at one point, fiber was, you know, perceived to be of little benefit because we couldn't digest and absorb it. But now, you know, with tons of evidence, we know that fiber is a key part of a healthy diet. So really interesting that this, you know, this term anti-nutrient, obviously, like with the anti in front of it, you're like, oh, that can't be good for you. But it actually, you know, we know that fiber is an anti-nutrient and it is something that's actually really beneficial. So already there's some confusion there around the language and the terms. But there are also other kinds of anti-nutrients found in plant foods like tannins and phytic acid. And these things also have, you know, they may interfere with the absorption of nutrients like lectins. Again, like I said, they're carbohydrate binding, so they may, you know, prevent you from absorbing everything from what you're eating, but that doesn't necessarily mean that there's like adverse effects on eating them. And we typically get more out of eating like lectin containing foods than we would if we avoided them, but we'll get into that. So one other thing I wanted to say are just like the claims around lectins, and you can probably jump in on this too, Tarek, but some of the claims about lectins and like toxicity are true. So you've probably seen this. So it is actually known that lectins, like the ones in beans or legumes, can cause like digestive upset or vomiting and diarrhea when beans or legumes are eaten raw or uncooked. So when we cook them, it destroys the lectins, or adequate cooking of beans or lentils or whatever destroys the lectins, and same with the canning process, that would eliminate the lectins as well. So there is actually some, you know, there's evidence out there that eating raw beans, or like I think one thing I looked at was about like white kidney beans, and eating those raw or uncooked, you know, contributed or resulted in like this lectin toxicity, or you're just eating too high of a concentration of these lectins because they haven't been you know, cooked off in the cooking process or whatever. Go ahead. I can see you like
I was just gonna say I was just gonna say that it's like this, it's true that I guess like scientists or science uses the term toxicity, but I think when people hear it it automatically Yeah, it automatically almost sounds like a snake bite, like poison or like it's venomous.
Right.
But in this case, it's toxic because the amount of it has resulted in some sort of adverse effect. And in this case, the adverse effect is digestion troubles. It's not like the adverse effect is like, I don't know, like gut rot or something,
Yeah, like,
or it, or
right.
extreme weight gain, like Dr.
No,
Gundry is
I
saying.
think it's
Yeah.
like if you, I don't, I'm trying to think of something to compare it to, but almost like lactose intolerance. Like if you
Yeah,
have, if
yeah.
you're someone who has lactase enzyme deficiency and you eat more lactose than your body can like deal with, then you're going to see some adverse effects. And I think the same is
Right.
with lectins.
But people don't consider dairy, quote, toxic. But
Right. Well, some
that's all
people
I'm trying
do.
to get across. Oh, yeah, okay. yeah. Anything is possible.
Right. But anyway, so these claims about lectins being toxic or causing, you know, gut issues, excuse me, are reinforced in this book by Dr. Gundry, who,
Right.
yeah, so the plant paradox. So, I don't want to like talk on for talk on. I don't want to ramble on forever, but I just wanted
No, I
to
love it.
the plant paradox side, I kind of wanted to just tell you guys or read from, I think this is just like from the back of the book, but I just wanted you guys to get a better idea of what Dr. Gundry, you know, describes this plant paradox diet as. So you mentioned he's a cardiologist, and I think something else I read said that he's a former cardiologist or former heart surgeon.
And
So
he calls himself a cardiologist, but he wasn't. He was a cardiac surgeon, which I don't know why he's so upset
I don't
about
know.
being a cardiac surgeon that he wants to call himself a
I
cardiologist.
don't
They're
know.
both great occupations. I don't just, why
Totally.
are you saying that?
I don't
Yeah.
know. So he it says Dr. Stephen Gundry reveals that gluten is just one of a variety of common and highly toxic plant-based proteins called lectins. Lectins are found not only in grains like wheat, but also in gluten-free foods that most of us commonly regard as healthy, including many fruits, vegetables, nuts, beans, and conventional dairy products. These proteins, which are found in the seeds, grains, skins, rinds, and leaves of plants, are designed by nature to protect them from predators, so we mentioned that, including humans. Once ingested, they incite a kind of chemical warfare in our bodies, causing inflammatory reactions that can lead to weight gain and serious health conditions. At his waitlist-only clinics in California, Dr. Gundry has successfully treated tens of thousands of patients suffering from autoimmune disorders, diabetes, leaky gut syndrome, heart disease, and neurodegenerative diseases like Parkinson's, with a protocol that detoxes the cells, repairs the gut, oh my God, and nourishes the body. In the Plant Paradox, he shares his clinically proven program with readers around the world. So that all of the details are in this book that you can get your hands on for $19.99. Okay, anyways. The simple and
Use
daunting
our code no BS to get 10% off.
the simple and daunting fact is lectins are everywhere. So just creating so much fear already.
Yeah,
Thankfully,
he's used so many terrible phrases like toxic and chemical warfare.
yeah, and
It sounds
inflammation,
awful.
I know. Thankfully, Dr. Gundry offers simple hacks we easily can employ to avoid them, including.
Don't eat anything.
Exactly.
Stop eating.
Yeah. So here are just a few things he says. Peel your vegetables. Most of the lectins are contained in the skin and seeds of plants. So peeling and deseeding them, like tomatoes and peppers, reduces the lectin content. Shop for fruit in season. Fruit contain fewer lectins when ripe, so eating apples, berries, and other lectin-containing fruits at the peak of ripeness helps minimize your lectin consumption. And swap your brown rice for white. Whole grains and seeds with hard outer coatings are, so basically he's saying like whole grains are bad because they're full of
Bad, yeah.
lectins, but like the refined version, so like white rice, they have less lectins in them, so they're better. And then, so some of these health benefits that Dr. Gundry claims people have seen are, and then even like other people, like celebrities, claim they've seen because of this diet. Like Kelly Clarkson is a big one. When I was doing my reading, it said that she like claimed she followed this diet and she was initially
Ugh.
following it to like address some inflammation or some bullshit like that. And she ended up like losing 37 pounds. And
I know we all have our own journeys and whatever. We're like, everyone's like on a like endless journey with respect to diet culture and, you know, bullshit nutrition science. And I love Kelly so much. Like, I love her. She's so talented. Obviously, like, an icon in our culture. She was the first winner of American Idol. That's a huge deal. Yeah. But she is so, she's always doing this kind of, like, diet culture BS stuff. And it makes me so sad.
Yeah. And I like you said, everyone has their
own. Like, perpetuating to other people.
Right. And everyone has their own journey, like you said. And, you know, you can't, I've learned, you know, you can't blame the dieter, like, you just have, it's really just diet culture that clearly she's affected by, like many other people. And it's just sad. Yeah, like, we're not hating on Kelly Clarkson here. But
no,
I'm just,
I love
I'm
Kelly.
I'm just saying, yeah, she's
incredible,
just
songstress, yeah, voice like an angel.
Totally. She's just one example of, like, someone who has spoken out about the plant paradox diet and, like, the wonders that it's done for them. But, so anyways, I just wanted to say, yeah, so people claim that going lectin-free includes improved digestion, weight loss, increased energy, reduced cravings, reduction of acne, reduced headaches and body aches, things like this. And I don't know. I will get into this, but the research doesn't really support that. And one last thing.
And also, these claims mean nothing when there's no randomized controlled double-blind trial that shows that plant paradox diet is better than anything else.
Exactly. Okay, so why don't we actually get into some of the research? Do you want to jump in?
Yeah, sure. So actually, I'm really excited by our conversation earlier about Parkinsonism, and I wish I'd seen this paper earlier. And I'll touch on it briefly, maybe near the end of the episode.
Okay.
But I'm kind of just saying this out loud to remind both of us that I want to talk about it. But I only just like clicked this morning and I was like, I wonder if there's a relation to this. And I did find an interesting paper. And I'll share the results in a bit. But maybe I'll go through some of what I found. And hopefully I won't double down on all the stuff you already said, because we did have some overlapping stuff. But
no, that's
it was all.
And yeah. I figured, even when I was like looking at the research and things like that, that there'd probably be some crossover.
Because the other thing is, like you were saying, there's really not that much because it's almost like, I don't know, it's not an interesting field to look at, because all these claims are basically BS. So it's like, we already know the like nutritional like foundations of how lectins work in the body, and there's no real need to like be deathly afraid of them.
Yeah.
So these experiments are almost like, okay, but like, we already know that this isn't harmful. So you know what I mean? What's the benefit of carrying out this kind of experiment?
Right.
Anyway. So, so some of what I looked at, so one paper that I did look at was called Nutrition and Gut Health, the Impact of Specific Dietary Components. It's not just five a day. People love having fun with their titles. Anyway. So this was by Rhodes, in 2020, so just published this year, really recent. So it compiled a lot of really recent data.
Nice.
And it ended up citing just two studies where they looked at lectins and how they were taken up by neurons, for example. So obviously, we've maybe mentioned this before and dabbled in it a little bit, but just like we have neurons in our brain and in our nervous system, the nerves that spread out to our appendages to control our movement and also to receive information about sensation, there's obviously lots of neurons that are part of the nervous system that go into our gut, of course, not only to control the movements of our gut, like the movements of the intestines and so on, but also doing a whole lack of other things. And that's a part of the nervous system called the enteric nervous system, which is found in our digestive organs, and also communicates back to our central nervous system, aka our brain and our spinal cord. So there were two studies that were cited by this paper that looked into lectins being taken up by neurons. One of them was in C. elegans, which is a worm. It's a very common worm used in, biological experiments.
Okay.
And one of them was in a rat. So basically, it involved, what they found was that there were toxic cellular mechanisms that ended up being induced by the lectin uptake. So like Hannah was saying earlier, there are known chemical pathways or, you know, cellular pathways in the body or in any biological organism that might be toxic or have some sort of negative effect because of an interaction with lectin proteins. But in these experiments, of course, not only were they not done in humans, were they not done in a human that was eating a complete meal with a, you know, complex body with many organs working in an interconnected way. These were done in a worm and in a rat, and they were doses that would be enormous compared to normal eating. And this kind of reminded me of when we were talking about the MSG experiments and how in some of those experiments there were some negative effects in the central nervous system on brain function specifically. I think it was some sort of memory tasks or something that the different experiments were doing with high MSG doses, but they were MSG doses that were like pound right. of MSG yeah. for human consumption compared to what would normally be like a half teaspoon
yeah.
over a dish that would be served to like five people.
Yeah.
So of course these are what we would call toxic levels of this molecule, which would, I guess there's no surprise that would end up with adverse effects. And basically you can kind of extrapolate that to like any protein or any molecule. If you give too much of something, it's very likely that there's going to be a cellular mechanism that will result in whatever, maybe let's say the death of that cell right. because it's overloaded with some sort of chemical or protein, which may not normally be toxic or may not normally result in adverse effects, mm-hmm. but it's just like not a natural state for that cell to be in. So what else can I talk about here? So we were talking earlier about the agglutination
yeah.
or this kind of binding together of lectins or the binding together of cells caused by lectins. So this can happen in the, you know, in the small intestines, for example, to interfere. So it's theorized that it might interfere with nutrient absorption. And this is what we were talking about earlier, Hannah, what you brought up with, you know, for example, eating too many uncooked beans, which I don't know why you're doing that in the first place.
Who's eating
probably
uncooked
wouldn't.
Beans?
Exactly. Would result in maybe, let's say, these lectins are binding to the cells on the inner lining of the small intestines, and this might cause problems with absorption of the nutrients that you would normally get from the beans to the rest of your body. But, of course, not only are you not eating uncooked beans, but it happens to be the case that these high levels of lectins that are found in beans are probably only restricted to, like Hannah was saying before, kidney beans and soybeans. This isn't the case for all beans. So obviously, not only should we not be afraid of, you know, kidney beans and soybeans, yeah. but we shouldn't be afraid of beans in general, because totally. Obviously you're cooking these beans and you're eating them with a bunch of other foods which are going to aid in the digestive process, because there's fiber, you're probably consuming water at the same time, etc. Okay, so I did find an interesting blog post by Dr. David Katz. So he called it, and I hinted at this earlier in my BS of the week from 2 weeks ago when we talked yeah. about the skeptical cardiologist. So this was one of the blog posts that was cited by the skeptical cardiologist in their blog post about Stephen Gundry. So Dr. David Katz says that Gundry has basically scared people out of eating, you know, fruits and vegetables because of this imaginary threat, and out of dairy and yeast and seafood and so on, and eggs. So of course, like we've been talking about this whole time, it's much more nuanced than what we hear. So what was I going to say here? Oh, he brings up this really interesting analogy, actually. So should you fear lectins? And he says, if yes, if your answer is yes, only if you do the same for oxygen. So he says, and I quote, as I recently noted to a colleague, oxygen is not a theoretical toxin with theoretical harms in people. It is a known toxic with established harms. The atmosphere of our planet is thus highly analogous to the dietary sources of lectins. Both contain compounds with potentially toxic effects, but like Hannah was saying earlier, the net effect is overwhelming from both eating plants and breathing. Which I think is like a perfect analogy. You're not going to stop breathing just because we know oxygen, for example, triggers toxic cellular mechanisms, because we know obviously breathing leads to the, you know, ingestion of oxygen, is that the right word? Or the inhalation of oxygen into our circulatory system, which is necessary for life.
Right.
Because every single cell needs oxygen, even though maybe sometimes oxygen can act in, you know, adverse ways and result in cell death. It's overwhelmingly on the pro side than the con side. Overwhelmingly on the pro side is eating plants, you know, and consuming dairy and eggs if you choose to do so, compared to not doing so at all.
Yeah. I like that you say that, and I agree that that was something that I was going to bring up, is that, like, the evidence demonstrating, like, the benefits of eating plant, not only plant foods, but, like, beans and legumes and, you know, and whole grains, which are some of the key things that Dr. Gundry tells you to cut out. The research supporting these things, like, far outweighs any research that the lectins in them are harmful. So
yeah, exactly. So now I just wanted to, where we're getting kind of near the end of the episode, I want to very, very lightly touch on this study that I have to say I just found this morning by coincidence.
Yeah.
And it was kind of me, like, looking around just for fun. So I haven't read through the whole thing very specifically, but I did do a quick browse through it. And definitely, I think it's an interesting study to share. And of course, I'll leave it in the show notes. And maybe I'll dabble into it a little bit more and tweet out about it.
Yeah.
So this study is called, let's see here, it's called Ingestion of Subthreshold Doses of Environmental Toxins Induces Ascending Parkinsonism in the Rat. So this study kind of brings together a couple of things that we were talking about earlier. For one, it talks about how neurons can uptake lectin, for example.
Okay.
Like I talked about earlier, it's true. We have seen that before. So this study looks specifically at Parkinsonism symptoms. So they used lectin in combination with an herbicide called Paracat. Yes, it's a fast-acting herbicide. So when they combined the doses of Paracat and lectin together through digestion, so they basically got these rats to, you know, get this toxin Paracat and lectin together in their stomach, and they digested it. It was shown that the lectins, when they were in combination with the herbicide, traveled up through the vagus nerve, which is a nerve from the central nervous system that actually goes down into the digestive system and, you know, contacts digestive organs, I think namely the stomach being one of them.
Yeah.
Travels through the vagus nerve and goes up into the central nervous system to the brain and apparently triggers Parkinsonism symptoms. So, for example, decreased motility or decreased ability to move, for example, is one of the things they looked at. But something important to take away from this study, even though they were, you know, they allege that they're using doses that might be more natural, for example, they call them sub-threshold doses. I'm not an expert in, you know, herbicide doses, for example, to say whether or not this would be analogous to human consumption of a single fruit that's probably been washed and sat in a warehouse for however long and then consumed by a person in combination with a meal. I'm not sure if their dose is analogous to that sort of, you know, what would be a more natural way to consume a product that's touched herbicides, for example, by a human. But they do mention in their discussion, and I'll quote, at the doses and the administration routes they used, which was its oral gavage, which basically they stick a needle into the stomach to make sure that all of the medication goes all the way to the stomach. Because sometimes if you rely on an animal swallowing something, for example, it may not all go to the stomach. Maybe some of it spills out.
Okay.
You know, just one example. So they want to make sure their doses are taken in exactly so they can compare one animal to the other.
Yeah.
So at the doses and administration route, i.e. oral gavage, used in the present study, however, lectins or Paracat, when administered alone, did not induce any significant effect on the parameters analyzed, i.e. motor performance, gastric emptying, tone and motility, and immunohistochemical properties. So basically, to boil that down to its fundamentals, lectin alone, or the toxin alone even, didn't result in these Parkinsonism symptoms that they found, again, to reiterate, in this rat model.
Right.
So not only was it not done in humans, but it seems like it's a very specific effect that has to do with a combination of lectin and paraquat together in the ingestion and isolated from, you know, other things,
right.
Isolated from like a whole meal that a human would maybe consume, for example.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I guess this study, apparently this was done in 2018. I guess apparently it triggered some headlines that, you know, were saying that added to this kind of fury against lectins that maybe they might lead to things like Parkinsonism. But I would say that the results from the study, you know, it seems like it was good science. Like they were very thorough. And again, they cleared it up themselves in their discussion of the paper. Like, this is an effect that was found in like a very unique circumstance. You know
right.
what I mean? It was in combination
right.
with oral gavage in these rats. So I don't, again, like, I don't think we should be afraid when science like
yeah.
this comes out
yeah.
and that we should take it as like point blank, like, oh, lectins must be bad because they resulted in these Parkinsonism symptoms. It is much more nuanced than that. And just because a headline might be like, you know, all scary and fanciful in their claims does not mean that they're actually true.
Yeah.
You know, when a popular science magazine might, for example, take this paper and boil it down to some very key points and exclude other, you know, relevant nuances.
Right. Yeah. That was such a good explanation. I think that.
Oh, thank you so
much.
Really,
I was like in the zone listening to
you. I kind of like, I didn't want to talk about it because I don't like talking about things when I haven't read them.
Right.
So I'm being very honest with everybody listening.
Yeah.
Like, this is I wouldn't recommend this. Like, don't talk about something you haven't read. You know, like when people like retweet articles, I'm like, have you read that? Like,
right.
did you actually get to this bottom paragraph, which actually like goes against the argument you were trying to say? Anyway, I don't like doing that, but
yeah.
I did want to share it because it seemed very relevant.
Very relevant.
Especially to, you know, the note that was sent to us very kindly about talking about the, you know, Gundry MD and the plant paradox.
Yeah, yeah. I think, we really wanted to keep this episode kind of general. I did have, like, a few notes here around, like, specific claims or the claims in grains promoting inflammation or the lectins in legumes causing this or the lectins in vegetables. I mean, all of them, it really comes down to like they're in terms of grains. Like, again, we know that there's so much evidence to back up whole grain consumption actually like reducing
right.
inflammation or being associated with, you know, reduced risk of type 2 diabetes and reduced cancer rates rather than, you know, these claims that lectins cause these things. So that's
right.
just one thing I wanted to kind of sum up is like we have way more evidence in humans like supporting, like I already said, whole grain consumption of legumes, like and the benefits that come along with those things. Like I said, inflammation, blood pressure reduction, reduced risk of diabetes and reduced cholesterol, things like that. I just wanted to touch on like the lectins in vegetables and because I think there's I get a lot of questions about nightshade vegetables and like, because there, you know, there's claims out there that they're associated with inflammation and whenever people are on like a anti-inflammatory diet, those are the first things to go. And so like I already said, like some vegetables contain lectins, specifically the nightshade vegetables like tomatoes, peppers, eggplant, etc. And you know, these are foods that are high in nutrients and antioxidants. And there's really no evidence that the lectins in these vegetables are harmful. So again, like we said, lectins are destroyed by cooking. And a lot of times, even if they were harmful, lectins are destroyed by cooking. And we typically cook nightshade vegetables. And, you know, with the exception of like tomatoes, and tomatoes are often, so we know, eaten raw in things like salads or sandwiches. And there's been, like, with no apparent difficulty, there's been nothing seen or no reports of adverse symptoms associated with.
And because you're having a slice of a tomato.
Right. You're not eating like 20
yeah.
tomatoes or even like more
right.
than that, probably, in a sitting. So there's no reports of adverse symptoms associated with the lectins in raw tomatoes. And Hold on. Let me just.
I mean, we're also, I guess, like, one thing we haven't noted this whole time is the, not only is this junk science or, like, science that's blown out of proportion, yeah. but Stephen Gundry wants people to buy his,
I know.
It's called Lectin Shield. The, and I have a tweet in front of me from Dr. Jennifer Gunter,
okay.
Who tweeted about this recently. She like basically like comparing it to like other junk science, like the science that, or the junk science that Dr. Oz spews, for example, like this Lectin Shield $80 bottle of anti-lectin yeah. whatever drug is not worth the money because there are no adverse things that you're, you know,
right.
Suffering from yeah. because of the consumption yeah. of lectin from your meals.
Exactly. And I think that one thing, you know, and we've talked about this before, but a lot of people claim that when they like shift to these diets, or so say like the plant paradox yes, diet, yeah. they see all of these results, whether it's weight right, loss right. or whether it's just like more energy or whether it's reduced blood pressure or whatever it is. But like, come on, that's not because you're cutting out lectins. It's probably because you're cutting out all like a lot of processed foods or a lot of like foods with added sugar or added sodium or whatever
you're
it is.
You're paying attention to what you're eating and like whether or not those are like...
Yeah.
It's not, maybe those could be like more healthy choices than you've been making normally, but you also might be, for example, like calorie restricting or over exercising because you're paying attention to like you think you're paying attention to your health more than
right.
you used to, for example.
Exactly. Yeah. It's not because you cut out lectins. It's because you're probably adopting healthier eating habits just as a whole, even if you're not eating lectin containing foods, whatever. You're still like, if you're seeing Dr. Gundry or whatever, he's probably telling, like, you know, telling you what to eat, and you're cutting out, a, you know, probably packaged snack foods and things like that. I'm assuming, like, if he's telling you to cut out tomatoes, he's probably not gonna be encouraging you to eat like potato chips. Well, actually, you have to cut out right. potatoes anyways because they have lectins in them, right. but anyways, and I know you're probably gonna add in exercise and things like that too. Like, I'm assuming, you never know with these questionable doctors, yeah. he might not be telling you to do that, yeah. but
this is all our opinion, so don't sue us, yeah. also, Gundry,
yeah, yeah, And then, and just like the last kind of red flag is that is the supplements, like you said, like
right.
Any diet that is telling you to remove like an entire slew of foods, but then add an entire slew of supplements is such a huge red flag, in my opinion.
It's a money-making scheme.
It's a money-making scheme. And in my opinion, like a healthy diet would require less supplementation because you're getting most of what you need through food. I'm not saying that you wouldn't need supplements or that there aren't certain things that you might have to supplement, but in my opinion and in my experience, like, and unless you've got some specific condition that requires you to take certain supplements or medication, like, that's not the way it works, like cutting out a ton of foods right. and adding in a bunch of supplements. That's not what a healthy right. diet looks like to me anyways.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I guess like bottom line or to sum it up, currently, as we've said, like lectin research is pretty limited, regarding its impact, both good and bad on humans. So, you know, it's really questionable that, I mean, with like many things, it's really questionable that there's people out there that are so like convinced that this is like the diet, and even Dr. Gundry, like that he can be making these claims. And we know in certain cases, like with the white beans or kidney beans, that dietary lectins can be toxic. And I hate the word toxic, like you said, but they can have adverse effects in excessively large amounts. But us humans don't normally consume doses high enough to be of concern, like to right. be afraid of lectins. You know, the research in humans is not there. And we know that there's so much research that actually shows benefits of eating lectin containing foods in the right ways, like when they're cooked or when, you know, whatever, or in amounts and that aren't excessive.
Yeah. Let this also, I'll just say, like, let the science that is done in animals, be just that. Like, appreciate it for what it is. Like, this is science done in a petri dish or an animal. It gave its findings. Those are findings that are relevant to that experiment in that experimenter's hands at that time, in that specific model. So let that be what it is. And, you know, we shouldn't be extrapolating that to, for example, like the human condition.
Totally.
It's just not scientifically accurate to do that.
Yep.
And anyone who does that is really making some huge, you know, fundamental errors about how we analyze scientific results.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good... I like that. Thank you for saying that.
Thank you.
All right. So that was, yeah, like I said, that was a robust episode, a hearty episode, a hearty topic. I actually had like the list of like Dr. Gundry's yes or no list that I wanted to read out, but maybe we'll, I don't even want to share it though, because I don't want people reading that.
Right.
You can find it yourself and see how like just crazy it is. There's just a huge list of foods that you should, like really healthy foods that he says you shouldn't eat, which is really disappointing. But yeah, the plant paradox diet is very questionable, and you don't need to fear lectins, and don't eat, just don't eat raw kidney beans
and you'll be fine. There's this one MD that's saying this, but there's like a hundreds and maybe let's say like thousands of dietitians and other MDs that are saying it's not true.
Yeah, exactly.
So look at the numbers, I guess.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Yeah. So Tarek, let's wrap this up. What's been tasty for you this week?
What's been tasty for me this week is a recipe that I really love. And I will add that Thomas made it better than me recently. So
my tasty is
very specific to the batches that he's been making. And it is cornbread muffins. I love cornbread muffins. They're so good. And I will share the very specific recipe that I really like. And I hope you enjoy it. Cornmeal is very affordable. And, it makes for a good, accessory to any meal, I guess. Yeah. Whether it's breakfast or dinner or lunch.
Yeah.
I think it's really flexible, in those cases. Very versatile. So that's my tasty. I love cornbread muffins. I love having them with butter. I love having them with a meal, pairing them with a salad.
With chili. Yeah.
With chili, yeah,
absolutely. Love that. I love cornbread too. So, cornbread muffins, love it.
So I would love to ask you, what's been tasty for you,
thank
Hannah?
Thank you so much for asking.
You're welcome, yeah.
So like we said, I was on vacation last week. I went to PEI with my family, blah, blah, blah. Hannah, stop talking about going to PEI. but when I was there, and like I said, there was a couple of my friends there at the same time, and one of my friends talked about going to this seafood restaurant, and maybe some people listening have heard of it, but it's called Richard's Seafood, and it's not a big restaurant or anything like that. It's like you just go up and order at a window, and then they like give you your food at another window, and they have some seating, and it's really nice. I forget the area of PEI that it's in. Maybe I'll...
If wherever you are in PI, you can probably reach it.
True. Very true.
PI in half an hour less. So.
But they had, such good food. Everyone... And you know what? A couple years ago, my parents had heard from their friends that this Richard's Seafood had really good food. It's very, how do I want to say this? It's, fried seafood. Like, they have...
Way to go, Richard.
Yeah. They have, lobster rolls and, fish and chips and this fish burger that basically has this crusted fried fish on it with a really nice almost house made tartar sauce that's got lots of dill
that sounds
in
amazing.
It and oh my gosh, it was so good. I had that fish burger, and then my family got lobster rolls, and it was just so good. Sometimes I've been really disappointed by lobster rolls. I don't know, do you like lobster?
Love it.
Okay. And when you really want a lobster roll, and it's summer and you get a lobster roll, but then it's really disappointing, that's just the worst.
Well, because sometimes it's it's more mayo than lobster.
Yeah, sometimes they really skimp on the lobster, but they did not at Richard's. They do not skimp. There was
way to go, Richard.
Big chunks of lobster tail and stuff in that Come lobster on, roll. Richard. Yeah, go Richard. So anyways, Richard Seafood and PEI. Can't remember where exactly, but if I can figure it out, we'll tell you somehow.
I'm guessing there's only one.
What? There might actually be two. There's one. Like,
oh, go
there's
Richard.
One, like, I'm not sure. There's one like main restaurant, and then there might be like another little stand somewhere else in PEI, but I'm not sure. So
friend of the pod, friend hopefully, of the pod,
maybe Richard, we can get him on.
A business deal going.
Yeah. but yeah, you guys should check it out if you find yourself in PEI.
Yeah, before we go, thank you for that tasty. That tastes very good, and I would love to have lobster sometime soon. I do want to shout out some locations before we go.
Amazing.
So I would love to say, please, it would really help us get up in the charts if you could go leave us a written 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. That would be so incredible.
Please.
Andrea still holds the number one spot. Andrea, you're a real one. We appreciate it. If you could get your parents to do it, that would be incredible. But it has been fun looking at how our listenership has kind of expanded geographically recently.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to shout out some fun locations that have been listening to us. So, of course, like homegrown, we love our Halifax listeners, number one city. Thank you so much for everything that you do for us. We do have a bunch of listeners from Atlanta, Georgia. So hello to our friends from south of the border. Hello to our friends from Atlanta, Georgia. We have a growing number of listeners from Bangkok. Hello to our friends in Bangkok. Yeah. We also have a bunch of friends listening to us from Illinois, in Aurora, in Chicago. So hello to you.
I love Chicago.
So yeah, there's kind of been, me too, there's been like, yeah, there's, a little bit of spread of our podcast around the globe. So we really appreciate that. Thank you so much for listening to us, friends in Germany. I know we have a bunch of listeners in Germany. Friends in Luxembourg, friends in England. So thank you very much, everybody, for listening. Please leave us a review if you like this episode. It means a lot to us, and we'd love to read it out.
And we'll show you out. Yeah, exactly. All right, you guys. So yeah, that's it. We will talk to you next week.
Yes, follow us on Twitter and Instagram. We'll talk to you next week.
Bye.